Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. It's a beautiful Friday, a party Friday, and in celebration of that, we're going to bring you murder, mayhem, and espionage.
There we go. That's
always appropriate. On
sort there of sex, lies, and videotape only.
Dr. Don at 4:30, our colleague or former colleague, and we've got a great one starting off
with hour. Mark Poffin. This from Mark Timon. Everybody, happy party Friday. Happy party Friday to everybody there, too.
Who are our sponsors, Julie?
AmericaCitizenPress.com and Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Chuck and Julie, truth straight up. Let's go right ahead and bring in our law enforcement expert, Mark Poff. Once again, Mark, thank you for joining us today. You were sending me an email. You were watching the Rittenhouse testimony like Chuck, screaming at your computer or shouting at it, I take it.
I was absolutely going, that's not how it works. What is the one where somebody's talking about Facebook and she has all those pictures on her wall, it's some commercial. And he goes, that's not how any of that works. And I'm sitting there as many times, you know, I was a homicide detective for 10 years. And as many times as I've testified in court on homicides, sex assault and other major cases, I'm just sitting there going, man, this prosecutor is just totally clueless. I mean, this can't be right. And you sit there and you look at these videos. I mean, I just, the whole thing, but I actually want to start from the beginning, if I might.
Sure. Go for it.
You know, going all the way back to last year. So you have this event, this shoot, you know, you have these rioters. I don't say protesters. They're rioters. They're not protesters. And you have individuals for one reason or another, and I'm not going to get in their heads. That's not our job. Decide that they're going to help these individuals protect property where they have this car lot. And I can just imagine, you know, your whole life on this car lot, you know, 30, 40, 50 cars, and just thinking, oh my gosh, all my cars are going to get smashed. But the thing is, it's all irrelevant to the case. It's all irrelevant. Right. So for some reason, Kyle Rittenhouse decides that he's going to arm himself to protect himself. I do this all the time. I'm a retired detective. I have two concealed carry permits. I have a state one and I have a federal one that allows me to carry in Washington, D.C. I can carry a concealed handgun permit. In New York City, I can carry a concealed handgun permit. I don't carry that. And the prosecutor, this is really what was making my head blow up, is that he was making it sound as if that Kyle was arming himself because he was looking for trouble.
Right. Well, he made it sound like anyone who arms himself
is looking for trouble.
Is going there because they want to.
Your intent is to kill.
Right.
That's what he said. And I was just like, and actually you bring up a great point, Chuck. And I want to bring this up because one of the things I was first told when I became a cop is they actually train you. Okay. We want you to carry weapons, carry concealed carry, when you're off duty to protect yourself. What if you run across someone that you put in prison for 10 years, you know, you need to defend yourself. And one of the things they said is make sure you always carry a pair of handcuffs. And I was like, why do I have to lug around a pair of handcuffs? I already have to lug around a gun, an extra magazine in case it jams. And now you're telling me I got to lug handcuffs around, you know, and why? And they said, because there was a case years ago where an officer was involved in a shooting off duty, shot and killed this guy, and he didn't have handcuffs. And the attorney said, so you had no intentions of taking prisoners. You were just to kill everybody. And so that's why they told you to wear handcuffs. It's incredibly stupid. I don't wear handcuffs now because you're right. My business is not detaining anyone.
Take people into custody. Myself. That's right.
You know, so this is just insane that a prosecutor would go in there and say, and this case never should have came up. And this is my point is, as a detective who worked on numerous homicides, I have no issues. And it's so funny to see him in the video. He's trying to give himself up and the police are like, go away.
Yeah, the police are like, go away. You know,
so you know.
Well, that's because they're racist, Mark. I don't know if you heard Joy Reid.
It's all racist.
That. That's because white
people,
racist.
White people shooting white people, completely racist.
Right.
But, you know, the whole point is, you made me lose my train.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Well, it should have never.
During the investigation, I have no problem with them arresting Kyle. I have no problem with them starting their investigation and say, look, we have probable cause. He obviously killed these two people and shot this other person. Let's place them in custody. We have enough probable cause. Let's continue our investigation because it is a homicide.
Sure.
You need to take Absolutely. Him off. If he was actually there as an active shooter, you know, we need to take him off the street, continue our investigation. And then they should have determined days later, maybe hours or days later, they should have said, you know what? We've looked at the video. We've interviewed people. This looks like self-defense. Let's talk to the district attorney. Let's all sit down together. We've done this so many times. I've worked on cases where I've charged someone and then went back and said, you know what? I think it's self-defense. And then actually talk with the district attorney and drop the charges. All of this should have been resolved at that point. The fact that he charged within 48 hours, why?
Right.
Why do you do
that?
We
know why.
Well, exactly. You know why?
Where they got tripped up. Well, and what's one of the things I want to talk about this, and we'll play a Joy Behar soundbite too, because it goes to some of this. I was talking with, I said this on Wednesday, a relative of mine who is from Antioch, right? So she's followed this relatively closely, but even then it depends on who you follow. She was number one, surprised to learn. She thought all of the people who were shot had their hands up and were unarmed.
And were black.
And were black. And I'm like, no, none of them were black. And she's like, what? And she's like, why are they rioting then? I'm like, you know.
Well, someone put out on Twitter, he says, I'm a progressive person, highly educated, and I like to follow the news. So I was shocked to find out that this kid actually was being attacked and everything else. And I hadn't the slightest idea, following it on the corporate media, that it was anything other than a deranged killer.
Right. And actually, they make an interesting point, is the prosecutor actually said, if you were just arming yourself to protect yourself, why didn't you just arm yourself with a handgun? And he goes, well, that would have been illegal.
I know, exactly.
Well, it's like, dude.
He was asking him, did you hear the exchange where he said, why were you running with a fire extinguisher toward the dumpster fire? And he said, there was a fire. I was there to put it out. And I don't know if...
Well, which they implied was an act of aggression, the provocation to the rioters.
Yeah, doesn't that their fire the
Well, he attacked a fire with an extinguisher.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
There's got to be a law against that somewhere.
Well this is a twisted logic, I think, that the DA is trying to use, that by going there and defending property, and putting out the fires, he provoked the rioters. I mean, he asked him several times. He said, well, didn't you think that was going to make them mad? How come they and you're the detective here, but that shouldn't make any difference. I mean,
it's irrelevant.
Self-defense. If somebody is pointing a gun at your head, right? I mean,
but how do you know he's going to kill him until he's dead?
Right,
I mean, if he found out afterward, you know, that'd have been fine, but,
you know, I actually, when I went to college, I was actually thinking pre-law, which I fortunately wised up and didn't go that route.
Right.
And I was in a political science class, and it was obviously very liberal instructor said, you know, if someone's pointing a gun to, you know, let's say they've taken multiple hostages and they're pointing a gun to someone, do you have the right to shoot them? And one of the stupid students said, well, yeah. And he goes, no, you don't. You have no idea to know whether they're going to shoot that hostage or not. And then I raised my hand. I said, okay, so you let them shoot one and then you unload on them. Is that what we do? You know, I mean,
that ended your career. Well, there. Well, yeah.
You know, gonna go back. I mean, I kind of tuned in, I guess it is, on the Rittenhouse trial, maybe day 6 or 7. And today was day 10. And I haven't missed a moment since. I mean, I was just glued.
Well, since Kyle testified, that's what that brought me right in. When I saw Kyle, I was just like, what the hell?
I mean, I've never seen, even, you know, Judge Jeanine was saying, I've never seen such a self, how do I say?
Confident.
Not even say confident. He was just calm. He didn't get rattled. He was emotional at times, but he didn't get frustrated. He didn't get angry.
And he knew more about the law than the prosecutor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the prosecutors thought he wasn't going to take the stand, so they didn't prepare.
So today was motions and jury instructions, right?
The most boring part of a trial.
Right.
The most boring. So, I don't turn on my official YouTube or Kia Law thing till about, 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and sat riveted for the remaining 2.5 hours because it was the prosecution was saying, okay, we've got this fuzzy thing we've blown up 5,000 times and you can't really see anything, but we think he waved his gun at people. Therefore, you should give a jury instruction that you can't take self-defense if you provoke people, provocation defense. And and the judge going, I can't really see anything. And they go, yeah, well, it's sort of there.
It's enhanced. See where it's enhanced.
I saw that the whole time during when they had Kyle on the stand.
They
kept trying to get him to admit that he's flashing. And I never saw, I was like, which person are you looking at?
So after the judge can see nothing, he grants their motion for a provocation instruction. You go, what?
Well, I think he said,
No, he granted it.
So let the jury decide.
Means is that we won't do our job as judges by limiting evidence. But we'll let the jury decide. That's the biggest cop out for sleazy judges as there is.
The jury can
not only do two things. They can find you more guilty. You know, if you don't. And then they go to the lesser included, right?
I hate that.
Yes.
Well, I
will tell you, having been a homicide, I was a cop for 17 years, homicide detective for 10 years, and now I do consulting for about 6 or 7 years. My eyes have opened so much from working on both on the prosecution side. When I thought I was, working for God, you heard that whole phrase, and then working for the defense, predominantly, not all the time, but predominantly. I have to tell you, the system's rigged.
Yes.
And I don't like it, and you know, I think juries are getting, I think people are getting a little smarter to the fact. Years ago, I think people in a jury would actually say, well, they don't put innocent people on trial.
Right. I
think they've done so many clusters.
Yes.
That now I really think that juries, I hope, jurists, when they get onto a jury pool, that they say, you know what, they do bring innocent people to trial. Obviously, I've seen it. I've seen corrupt district attorneys in the state of Colorado where they brought innocent people who didn't even know the person that they said they kidnapped. I mean, I've seen it so many times, and we make that phrase over and over again, that you can indict a ham sandwich. It is so true. And this prosecutor, and I want to say this because I hate this guy with a passion.
Binger?
Okay.
Everybody hates Binger. Everybody just sits there screaming at Binger at their
Binger
at their,
is a moron. Binger. He's an idiot.
No, he's not an idiot. He's just
You're evil. Right. You're right.
The fat other guy is a moron. Binger is just evil, amoral jerk.
Well, and here's the thing. I agree with Alan Dershowitz was saying, because I think this is what, two-part question. Have you ever seen a judge scream at a prosecutor the way this judge?
Had him scream at me once.
Okay, you know, not fun, huh?
Well, I deserved it, I've never seen a judge like that. What's the right term? Admonish or
a
prosecutor for what is obviously intentional misconduct.
And I think
he's disbarred for what he did.
I think though he was doing it. I think Alan Dershowitz is right. I think he did it because the case is not going well. And
he wants a mistrial.
He wants the judge to do it. And the judge is like, that's why the judge is like, I don't believe you. You're not going in fair faith. The judge is like, oh no, you're not putting this on me, you evil moron.
We have good friends who do a lot of criminal cases and had one last 2 weeks ago in Fort Morgan where the prosecutor did the exact same thing and the judge went, no problem.
Problem. And the judge let him, it was like,
let him get away with it, or he gave him a mistrial?
They filed the motion for mistrial and the judge didn't have an issue with it at all. Hey, I saw Barney, I saw you kind of flash
pop up down.
Did you want to weigh in on this?
Yes, I do. Of course I do. My buddy Mark is on there. What the hell, Julie? If you just shut up for a minute, maybe somebody get a word in edgewise.
All right.
But what is wrong with all three of you? This is clearly a what do you call it when you're trying out for These prosecutors want to be on CNN.
Auditioning, I mean, yes.
Yeah, auditioning for CNN. What up? And you call them morons. These are full-fledged ass clowns. Right. When they had the kid on there that's – well, first off, wait a minute. Kyle was an ass clown. He had no business going there.
I disagree.
And, well, Mark, let
him well but hang on a minute. Hang on, and I'll take that up, Chuck. But
okay,
you do not go to a riot if you're a responsible gun owner. Now, I'm not saying – look, you go to – do you really think, Chuck, if I go to a riot with my mouth and a gun, you don't think I'm not going to get into it? I guarantee you I'm going to get into it. You leave your gun at home. I'm just saying. But having said that, why aren't we talking about a straw purchase? I hear all this talk about possession.
Let me explain that, Barney. I can explain that because that's a crucial point because it looks like the gun charge could possibly get dropped. In Wisconsin, he cannot buy a gun, but he can possess a gun. So, for instance, if he wants to go skeet shooting.
But that's true, Julie. But I cannot go up to Chuck, even if Chuck was my dad. Rev cannot go up to his father. Well, no, that's really not a good example because he could do that.
No, because the gun was kept. No, okay. The other people.
I'll tell you what. Rev could not go up to Mark. Okay,
no,
go ahead.
No, he can. But the way it was, because I explained this. So his friend bought the gun. His friend kept the gun in a gun safe in the friend's dad's house and got the gun out and then gave it to Kyle. So under Wisconsin law might be a little different than Colorado. He can possess it if he has a certificate, like a hunting certificate, and if the barrel is shorter than a certain length.
No, longer. Yeah, longer. Okay. They want them shorter.
But so what's interesting though about that, Barney, is they were arguing about this today. The prosecution failed, as far as the judge and anyone else can remember, to put on any evidence of how long the barrel was.
Wow.
So technically, under Wisconsin law, it looks like, you know.
Well, then my guess is because what was considered you can do an AR-15 with a short, a 16-inch, a 14-inch barrel if you have a 2-inch flash hider welded to it. Yeah, I know it's complicated. It doesn't matter. But yeah. Let me say this, too. This prosecutor, when the kid was on there that said he was a journalist, you know, right. He was blah, blah, blah. The prosecutor went at him and said, what are you? You're calling these riots? You know, he basically said, what the hell? I don't know. And Mark got a lot of respect for you. Like I said, you've got two ass clowns for CNN. And I don't know where this goes. I don't like the fact that you can bring in lesser charges.
No,
because there is something to be said for the defense.
It's a cop out.
Yeah.
It's a cop out.
It is.
Jurors that would never convict, like on a first degree murder,
right.
They'll say, okay, I'll do the manslaughter.
Yeah,
right.
Not the way to practice law.
No.
And,
you
know,
if you're a prosecutor, it's a great
bad
way.
Case.
But let me talk to Barney for a second. So,
oh,
Barney,
God, here we go. Go ahead.
Here we go. I did go to a riot armed. I went down to, Julie and I went down to the pro-priest rally down in Denver. We were supporting the Denver PD. I have a concealed gun carry, and so I brought my concealed gun carry, and Antifa and all of them jumped us. They punched Julie. I never took the gun out because I know once you do that, it's all kinds of trouble. But I wouldn't go down with after being at the one for support ICE. I wouldn't go unarmed where all these incredible, crazy Antifa Black Lives Matters are gonna get you.
I think so.
Okay, but just a minute, Chuck. Hang on, Chuck. I have a concealed carry too. And when I went down to the little get together, and listen, you kept your mouth shut. You didn't insert yourself into the whatever you want to call it. I'm pretty sure.
I couldn't help it. They were screaming in my face. Yeah. I didn't have to insert myself.
You're just a better man than me, Chuck. That's all there is
well,
to
yes.
it.
But we'd no, all no, acknowledge
clearly,
that.
Clearly.
But
I have a very bad temper, and I know what's going
to
happen.
You do hit it on the head, because this, as I predicted Wednesday, this is going to go to the jury Monday, right? I predicted that the attorneys did not want it to go today. That is, so I think you hit on the head the underlying risk in this case, that you're going to have a juror decides that they're going to hold Kyle accountable for going there in the first place.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
What Barney
yep.
said.
Which is, and, but I,
all right, Bernie, well, we have to get back
well, wait,
to
wait,
our
wait,
secondary
wait, wait,
guest.
One more thing, one more thing, one more thing.
Secondary
wait,
guest.
Wait, 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 wait. Have you ever seen a trial where a judge that's decent and sounds like a decent man yelled and scolded the prosecution so many times. I haven't either.
No,
okay.
Right.
Thank you, guys. Love you, Mark.
Thank you, Arnie. This is from Charlene. Let me roll with this quick. Yep. Arnie's thinking back when he was young, when he should not have gone anywhere with a gun. Kyle is a much cooler head than many grown men, including Barney. Sorry, Barney. And then Mark Tyman said, Barney, I thought you were not going to be the first one with a black rifle, but you would be the second. Leo.
I want to say something, if I can interject here. You guys are all looking at it backwards.
Okay.
You should not be looking at, okay, I'm going to go to this event. Should I arm up?
Right.
My view is you should always be armed to defend yourself.
I agree.
And then wherever you happen to be at that point. Now, some places, like I'm going to the airport, not wise.
Right.
But I'm saying you are arming yourself to defend yourself. You shouldn't be deciding. But actually, sometimes I do. It's like if I go to Denver, I know Chuck's in, you guys are up in Denver, so I'm going to arm myself. No, I'm kidding,
but you don't want to be like that FBI agent, though, who got drunk in the bar and was doing the hand flips. And remember, it fell out of his mouth.
If you saw me do a backflip,
if you go out to dinner,
it's going
to
be the gun.
If you go out to dinner, have a couple glasses of wine and get stopped and you're armed,
that's a problem.
Yeah.
So you can't go everywhere you want to go armed.
But here's
you do need to make those decisions. But the bottom line is, and this is what the prosecutor was missing. Actually, he probably didn't miss it. He knew exactly what he was doing. The bottom line is Kyle did not bring an AR because he wanted to shoot and kill people.
Oh, right.
It was obvious from his testimony and others. He brought the weapon to defend himself which is our second amendment right
protected by the Constitution. It is
by the Constitution, and he was trying to render aid. We can all have a great debate on whether he was stupid for going there. To me, it's completely irrelevant. He was there, he wanted to be there, he wanted to defend himself. And he chose to do his constitutional right, which is to defend himself with a weapon.
And Mark, and you're absolutely right. And that was one of the appalling things listening to the prosecutor. As you said, the prosecutor argued that actually, and you don't have the right. I mean, he went to, there were hundreds of people at the riot, right? He was no different than any of them. No one,
correct.
People who got shot shouldn't have been there either, right? That wasn't a wise choice.
Well,
some of them were armed.
Right, and they were armed, and that was no problem.
Who do you think the Army recruits to be armed and kill people? 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And sometimes 17-year-olds. They don't recruit 35-year-olds. It's 17 and 8. Well, it's probably 18 these days, but I had a great uncle, a great grandfather who volunteered for the Union Army age 14. And he got to do a lot of shooting and get shot.
When the prosecutor brought up Call of Duty, I was just like, dude, you might as well throw in the towel.
And even Kyle said, that's a video game. Oh, because he was saying,
I can tell the difference.
Clearly, this dude is a stupid prosecutor who had never even actually seen Call of Duty, because he said, well, don't they use AR-15s in Call of Duty? And he's like, dude, they use all kinds of guns and missiles. And I mean,
One of the best points, I wish it had come out earlier, or Kyle had really called him out. He goes, isn't the goal in Call of Duty is to kill everybody? And it's like, it's to kill the enemy.
That's right. You're in a team.
It's a military style. You have your team. In fact, when my boys played Call of Duty, they'd be like eight of these kids until 3 a.m. used to piss me off. And then they'd play in these teams.
Right.
It's not go kill everybody.
No, it's not an active shooter. Well, and here's the thing too, that I think, I know, hopefully, because I'm not real confident of Kyle's defense attorneys. Kyle himself is great. He should just do his own.
Have you ever seen a more saintly kid in your life? Yes, I was lifeguarding. Yes, I wanted to smear graffiti. Yes, I did this. Yes, I did that.
In between life-saving, you just wanted to kill people.
Right, yeah, right.
Right.
And you weren't a member of the Kenosha or the Antioch Fire Department, were you? And he said, well, yeah, I was a cadet. And that's not really a fireman. And I was a cadet. And then I got my little jersey and sweater.
I got the shirt.
Oh, you're lying again.
I got the shirt. That's all that matters.
And I think Yeah, really. I think also when you look at the testimony, it's clear Kyle didn't freak out. I mean, he only shot the people who were directly threatening him, yes, trying to grab his gun. He didn't shoot everybody else.
And that's what they tried to portray, is that he was an active shooter.
Oh, right. Well.
When you look at all these videos, this is nothing like that. That, you know, the first person he shoots is flipping, chasing him all over the place.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Dude.
And told him he's going to kill him.
That's a death wish from beginning to end. I think the second guy, correct him if I'm wrong, tried to hit him with a skateboard.
Well, one of those chop things like a baseball bat.
And Kyle, I thought, did a good job testifying that I knew that if he knocked me down and I lost consciousness, they would take my gun and they would shoot me and other people. So I knew I had to do that.
I think we need to start another chant these days. Let's go, Binger. Let's go, Binger.
Well, what do you think, Mark? We only have a few more minutes. Yeah. What do you think is
the likely thing?
Yeah. What's
the outcome? I mean,
granted, we don't know, and we're always wrong about this.
Yeah, right.
You know, having worked more for the defense here in the last few years as a consultant, you know, a hung jury is a win.
Yes.
Now, I guarantee you right now, the prosecutor's saying, I hope we can get a hung jury.
Yes.
The prosecutor wants it just as bad. And the defense, and someone actually said this, the reason the defense put Kyle on is because they were really trying to push for a mistrial, but now, or not a mistrial, a hung jury. Now they think, hey, we can win this thing.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a chance for a complete and total acquittal. I mean, if you know, having served on a jury, and I don't know if you guys have served on a jury, it depends on who the leaders of the jury are.
Yes,
always two or three people that are the leaders.
Yes.
And if they can go in there and have these conversations. But if you get someone who's agenda driven on that jury, they're going to sit there and say, no, he's a white supremacist because President Biden told me he's a white supremacist.
Right, right, right.
So therefore, I'm convicting on everything. And I don't even care about the facts.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you look at, I go back to the O.J. Simpson trial, right? And I remember talking to people and interviewing people there, and they were saying, well, he was an African-American man, so the facts didn't matter, right? He's a victim of racism, and therefore, you know, he shouldn't be convicted. And I think you're right. That's the one, I think, wild card in this, the agenda-driven people, or the jurors who are scared, right? You've got other people saying—
No, but all juries are a battle, assuming that they don't all agree, a battle between the advocates of one side and the advocates of the other side. That's why when you're trying a case, and you can get a pretty good idea of who seems to be nodding their head when you talk and everything else,
right.
You're feeding them everything. So when they go in that jury room, they're armed against whoever is opposing them. And that's what a lot of people don't quite get. And you've been on a jury, so you do. The one thing you cannot determine is how that battle
is
going to go. It's very hard to know, and that's why you get compromised verdicts. Okay, we'll give him second.
I'll do the manslaughter. Just get out of my face.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. And I hope someone kind of mentioned this. I hope the judge. You know, I don't want the judge to do a mistrial, even with prejudice. I would like to see the jury make a verdict. But to be honest with you, if the jury comes back after, let's say, 3 or 4 days, and it's hung.
Yeah.
You know, then I'd almost like to say, you know what, you know, as the judge, I've had a little time to think about this. Maybe I will just throw this out
with prejudice.
We're done here.
They can do that at any time.
Well, uh-huh. He's got to have the jury.
Do it after the verdict if he wants.
Yeah, after the verdict. Okay. And he can say, no, the evidence did not support that. So I'm going to be directed verdict notwithstanding. The decision of the jury. I don't think this judge is going to do that. I don't think he's got the gut.
Because then they'd be rioting. And I mean, they're already calling
it. There's going to be rioting. Be clear on that. If he gets an acquittal, you need to go back to that used car lot because that's where they're all going to go.
Right.
Well, even he's convicted, they'll all riot. You know, why not give it a shot?
It's been a while since we've had
it's kind of like, why
riot.
Do we drink?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Every day's a holiday.
There we go. And this is Party Friday.
It is Party Friday. I'm drinking my beer, but it's actually an A&W root beer.
I'm
drinking my caffeinated sparkling water.
Sure you are.
I used to have a friend. She called it kine. And I'm like, what's that? And she goes, wine in a coffee cup. I'm like, that's exactly. Bad. She would like walk her kids, you know, push a stroller. And I'm like, oh, that's bad. You need help there. But at any rate, Mark, thank you for your time. You've been great. We'll have you back on, you know, as these deliberations go. Yeah,
exactly.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks. And I want to read this from Charlene because I was going to mention this too. Charlene says, hoping the upcoming trial for Steve Bannon backfires as well as this one. I don't know if you saw that. They indicted Steve Bannon for contempt of Congress. Now, they mentioned in the tweets that Eric Holder was held in contempt of Congress. He was never indicted. I mean, all these other people, we'll see.
Do you want to play that Joyce Behar one?
Here. This was annoying. Chuck wanted to. No, it wasn't annoying that Chuck wanted this. Joy Behar is just like the most annoying person. And Thomas, if we could play the Behar bite and then go ahead and give Matt Dunn a call.
What the rest of you?
Well, he goes across. From what I'm gleaning from this case, the guy goes across state lines with an AR-15 with his mother and some other idiot in the car to defend himself against what? They're having a protest in another state and he takes it upon himself to go there. You know, and then he says it's self-defense. No. And that acting job of the crying, I can't even look at it.
Well, this is
that is one of the worst acting jobs I've ever seen.
I mean, that's just
hateful.
That's just hateful. It's like, but that's the left.
She has everything
right?
Wrong. He didn't take the AR-15 across state lines.
Right. It was already across state lines. And just so people, if you don't know, it's like 5 miles. I mean, Antioch's right at, I mean, it's close. And the rest of his family lived in Kenosha.
His father and he worked in Kenosha, everything else. I mean,
that's right. And this is from, Charlene. It's the Kyles and Chucks. Hey, and Julie's that'll save us if we could be saved, not the Peters that stayed home. And then Sandra and Joy. Sorry, I truly hate her and everybody on The View. I know I don't even watch it. I haven't watched it in years. So. I don't know. Thomas, again, if you want to go ahead and you can call me at Den, we'll talk about that. Another thing I wanted to talk about today, just kind of interesting, it's, you're not going to see it in the mainstream media, but thank you to some Freedom of Information Act requests. They got some documents in which the CDC acknowledges that they have no cases where somebody who has natural immunity, in other words, somebody who had COVID, recovered. They have no cases where somebody who had natural immunity had transmitted it to somebody else. No cases. The CDC had no cases of that, right? In the meantime, today, there's other studies coming out of United Kingdom showing how ineffective the vaccine is, right. And that probably Pfizer knew that all along, which is why they got rid of this.
But that booster shot sounds special.
Oh, man. I keep reading all these people who got the booster shot. Yes. Now, I'm sure there's some people got the booster shot and were fine, obviously, but there are also people who got it sick. But what this is, and the Trump people keep trying to blame it on unvaccinated people. And this is why they don't want to talk about natural immunity at all, right? Because it's clearly more effective. This is vaccinated people infecting other vaccinated people. You know, so, and they want to do mask mandates. Polis is, you know, declaring a hospital emergency after, they introduced mandates that the hospital staff quit. I mean, it's just all a bunch of nonsense. So, just like ivermectin doesn't work exactly. That's a different topic, though. We'll get into that later because we've got Dr. Dunn with us. Matt Dunn, Backbone Radio, 710 KNUS Radio. The expert of experts on the Russian hoax. Hey, Matt, thank you for your time, Matt. This afternoon. What, Matt, are you there? Thomas,
have you got me?
Yep,
yeah,
you got you.
There we go.
Okay, hey. We're pumping through. All right, thanks for having me around.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you, I've got so many questions for you, but first of all, with the
switching from Rittenhouse to our wonderful Russiagate.
The Russiagate, which now is, I mean, it's actually even more corrupt than I thought. I mean, a lot of
it's stuff, always more corrupt than you think. Every time it comes out, you go, wow, it's even more corrupt than
Matt,
I thought.
It's like all the stuff that you've been saying and we've been saying for 5 years now, it's like we said, worse than we thought. But what are some of your big takeaways from the stuff that's come out with some of these Durham indictments and the documents supporting the indictments?
Well, on some level, you have to say it is sweet vindication for Chuck and Julie, for Backbone Radio, for what we've been saying all the way along. But naturally, it comes years after the fact, right? At a point when it's very hard for very many people to be following this or understanding this. And
well, especially if they're listening to corporate media, because they're not covering it.
Yeah, the damage has already been done. Yeah. And so, you know, they essentially stole years out of Trump's presidency, maybe right. even all of them on some level. Right. In spite of it all, of course, he did a great and wonderful job.
Right.
But here we are now just watching the Washington Post today issue some very belated corrections to their Russiagate reporting.
Two articles.
Isn't that embarrassing? The reporters got Pulitzer prizes back in the day for this reporting. They got Pulitzers for this falsehood. It's amazing to see. And so we kind of just learn how the world works, and that, you know, you get paid, you get Pulitzers. Rachel Maddow gets a $30 million a year contract for spreading the Russian collusion lies for years. And now these sort of soft pedaled corrections, you see, and that's just kind of where we are, just reality, you know.
I saw Rachel Maddow had Peter Strzok on, of all people. It's like, and he had actually the audacity to say, well, we were never investigating the Trump campaign Now, somebody was saying they mentioned the Trump campaign like literally 16 times in the FISA warrant, right? So it's like, it's ridiculous. What do you think? Well, I think I know where you're going to go with this. One of the things that it revealed to me, or made more clear to me, that it is the depth of involvement had to have been a President Obama and the Obama administration. I think you had like Hillary Clinton and her people kind of making up the dossier, but meanwhile you've got the Team Obama making up the Papadopoulos stuff, the Carter Page stuff, and then they all kind of come together and get the FISA warrant out there. But again, it's clear that Obama was briefed on all of this and was I mean, you had the Strzok and the Page texts talking about the White House is in control. Obama
wants to know everything.
I mean, what do you think about what he knew or did and when he knew or did it?
Oh, they were all over it. You know, the Obama White House is running this, according to Strzok and Page text messages. They were all over this like hawks, and they were promoting it behind the scenes. And I just feel like anybody who's been really following this should have known this for quite some time. One question I have is, what's Durham going to do about that?
Yeah.
Sundance, the conservative treehouse, speculates that Durham might clean out some of the Clinton type people, but yet preserve and save the Obama potentially documentable involvement in all of this. So, you know, you step back from it and you see that they all knew, and maybe the genesis of the concept of Russia collusion came out of the Hillary camp and out of the campaign. But then, of course, Obama ran with it big time. And that's why Susan Rice wrote that sort of letter to herself in the last few minutes of the Obama administration, right? Saying we did this all by the book. So they were aware that this could come back, but we'll see how it plays. And hopefully we can get as much publicity to this as possible.
Yeah.
But as you know, when you're...
Well, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I don't think the Clinton campaign started it off and then the Obama and all that, because we find out that 48 hours after Papadopoulos had been appointed unpaid aide to the Trump campaign on foreign policy, they're inviting him down to Link University to meet Massoud. And the hacking of the Podesta emails hadn't even happened yet. So it's clear to me anyway that the Obamas were already tracing the FBI, the CIA, anybody associated with the campaign.
The Trump campaign.
It didn't matter what it was. But as far as Igor Danchenko goes and his Durham indictment, you'd have to say that probably comes out of the Clinton camp with Igor Danchenko working with Charles Dolan, total Clinton who thought he was going to be in the Clinton State Department if they found some way to get some sort of smear and slime against Trump. And that's what they did, you know?
Right. And this is from a question from one of our listeners. Was this all from the fellow they call Igor? Yes, not all of it, Sandra. No. There were sort of two arms. Igor Danchenko was a guy. So the way it worked is the Clinton campaign, and Michael Tao wrote about this years ago, saying there never was a Russia hack. The Clinton campaign is in trouble. The Hillary Clinton email thing, I think way back then, it's kind of exploding. They've got a lot of issues. They know WikiLeaks is going to be releasing the emails. So they decide they need to have a counteroffensive. So on one hand, they say, oh, we were hacked by the Russians. Then the Clinton campaign starts giving, they hire Fusion GPS, who hires Christopher Steele, who hires Danchenko, who takes information, the Igor guy, who takes information from, they just make it up. Basically, that became clear today. They were making it all
up. Exactly. They made it up.
And then in the meantime, you have the other arm. You've got, and this is the Obama people, I think, spying on the Trump campaign.
Well, they were doing that in March. They were doing that immediately.
Let me ask you, this I thought was really interesting. I found this. I went back and did some research, and this is from Cheryl Atkinson. The Obama administration massively expanded the NSA database searches of Americans, which is illegal. For instance, in 2013, they only had 9,600 searches involving 195 Americans. In 2016, listen to this, 30,355 searches involving 5,288 Americans.
That's they're tracing everybody in all the Republican candidates' campaigns. Now, eventually, they get down to just Trump because Trump's going to win. But they were searching everybody. They'd come up with Papadopoulos because he'd worked for Carson's campaign. And then they all remember Crossfire Hurricane. They said no, had nothing to do with the Steele dossier because we were tracking these people before the Steele dossier, and they were tracking him in March. Except it was illegal,
well,
so they had to
get hide it. That's how they roll. They get the private contractors to Fusion GPS, I believe, is one of them do political opposition research and find ways to gin up scandals against political opposition. And that was going on big time all through all those years. And so I guess you'd have to start saying that. I guess that's Obama, not just Clinton, right?
Exactly.
Well, what do you think now in terms of, is it still going on? I mean, because at least under the FISA court judge, finally, with, you know, Flynn went in there and he said, what are all these unauthorized searches? And they made him knock it off.
But Seth, they kept on doing it.
They kept on doing it.
Yeah. Said, oh, this is unauthorized. This is terrible. They check back 3 months later and they're still doing it. Yeah. They go, that's terrible. Don't do it anymore. So they check back 2 months later. They're still doing it.
And I guarantee you, they're still doing it right now. And the state elements did it all throughout the Trump administration when Trump was president.
Right.
That's the way the world works these days.
And look at what's going on. So you got the FBI agents involved in the insurrection. I'm now calling that the insurrection hoax. You've got, this I think is astonishing, the FBI raids Project Veritas.
How about a diary that has already been published by lots of people.
And then in the meantime, leaks the information that they seized from from his house to the New York Times, who he's suing, right? I mean, and the New York Times publishes this information, which isn't, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And we're all absolutely right. The deep state, I mean, they got away with it. Really, 5 years later, you know, like three low-level people got indicted for something that they'll never do anything for.
Right. It's some of the most effective dishonesty you could ever imagine in terms of the lie spread wall to wall. And the people like Rachel Maddow get the big new contracts and the reporters get the Pulitzers. You have to just step back and marvel at it. But the one thing I would say, there is potential that Durham could be, you know, rooting around and digging up some bigger fish. The Danchenko thing makes me think that there could be some other individuals maybe tied to the Brookings Institution, Fiona Hill, a Strobe Talbot, Benjamin Witz, people like that could be in trouble. And then the network could spread. It could go higher up. I'm a little hesitant to get too excited about that or optimistic about that. But I do think, you know, you have not seen John Brennan, James Comey do any tweeting for quite some time. Okay,
well,
there's a lot of substance you're seeing from these people, and that sometimes means that something is up.
Right.
So if you step back,
but
also,
look at the indictment. Look at the indictment.
Go ahead.
Look at the indictment. It's for lying to the FBI out of the material fact that caused them to believe in the dossier, except they knew all the facts. If you go over the indictment.
Yeah.
The FBI asked them about Dolan. I mean, they already knew about Dolan way back in 2017.
Sergey Milan, they knew Milan, that conversation had not happened with Igor Danchenko, which was the only source for this stuff in the dossier. The FBI knew.
Yeah.
You start adding it up, and you see that the FBI has become essentially the Stasi for the left-wing ruling class in America. Yes. And Sean Davis at the Federalist is always saying, you got to burn down all seven floors of the FBI.
Yes.
What they have become, it is shockingly, you know, should we be shocked at this point about it? But they've got their own Stasi, as the ruling class, and it was Winston Churchill in his famous 1945 Gestapo speech, in which he said, if socialists are ever going to get in power and take power and hold power in a country, they need a secret police to allow them to do it.
Right.
It does look to me like we are at that point with, our very own FBI. Yeah. And if they're going to try to say, well, we were duped. Oh, they had us believe in all this stuff. We were duped. Is Durham going to really allow that? Maybe he will. That's a question mark in my mind. How about you all?
But, you know, what concerns me is there, and maybe you're right, maybe he's going to go after more people, but there is no mention of a conspiracy in any of this, right?
Right. If you could bring a conspiracy to defraud the U.S. government or 10,000 other ones. Instead, he brings a thing that normally gets you about 6 months in jail, and it's easily refutable, saying you knew all this when you asked him the question, so that's no good. But what do you think, if there is another shoe to drop, what the next shoe would be?
Well, I guess I couldn't even speculate at this point. I just don't know what Durham is doing and where he is going. There's a lot of speculation that Hillary Clinton or Robbie Mook, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, could be getting a little bit too close to Danchenko for their comfort. But for me, at best, that's all speculation right now.
Here's my speculation and guess. I think the next thing that's going to go down is they're going to acknowledge that the Russians never hacked the DNC server.
If they do that, then that gets into Seth Rich territory, which is a very big deal.
Yes. Well, we know from that, if for folks who don't know, Seth
and
Rich that, was
Guccifer, just, wait a minute, Guccifer 2.0 was CrowdStrike. That DC WikiLeaks was CrowdStrike, and Massoud was FBI. I think those are some of the possibilities, I think, of shoes that could drop. Maybe.
That'd be great if they did that. And for folks who don't know, that Seth Rich was
that would be huge.
That would be gigantic.
The
Clinton aide was murdered, and the Gateway pundit has done a good job, and other people too, in getting documents that show the FBI, who keeps pretending they never, Seth, who we never even heard of Seth Rich, had thousands of pages of documents on the investigation that never went anywhere. Yeah, that would be good. I mean, if they do that, I think, let me read just some of the comments. This is from Charlene. Durham report thinks there's big trouble between Clinton, Obama, and Obama wing of the Democratic Party, thus the ramp up on the Clintons by Durham. And then Mark Timon says Durham needs to take on the FBI. They all need to go to jail too. Then Charlene says, again, you're onto it, Jacob, Obama versus Clinton machine. Obama may be schooling the Clintons, trying to keep them in line. Just my opinion. You know, I don't know. I think it wouldn't surprise me, because I do think the Biden people are the same as the Obama people, right? And the Clintons are kind of yesterday's news. But the only problem I have with that, I mean, sometimes I wonder, is Durham actually maybe doing it in good faith? Because
it's not possible, huh? Don't even think that.
But I mean, he could have just dropped it, right? I mean, he is doing something, and I'm kind of like, I wonder why, which maybe is why everybody, like you said, Brendan and Comey aren't talking. They're like, why is Durham still doing this? We've all moved on. I mean, what do you think, Matt?
Why is Biden allowing Durham to do this? I'm a little surprised they're even, why don't they just ban Durham and kick him out and defund him?
Yeah.
I don't understand why. I thought for sure that was just going to happen, and they'd have maybe bad press for like 2 days and everybody would forget about it, right?
Right.
But
right.
he is still going.
Right. And according to John Solomon, who has sources, the grand jury is, you know, the grand jury is rolling along, and the grand jury is
they've now gone on to bringing additional charges against Kyle Rittenhouse.
No. Hey, Matt, listen, thank you for your analysis.
Oh, it's great having
Tell
you
folks
on, Matt.
What you got, where they can listen to you, what you got coming up this weekend.
Right. 710 KNUS Backbone Radio on Sundays, 4 to 7 p.m. And I'll be bloviating about all of this and more. I don't usually get it all planned out until the day of.
Yeah.
Last Sunday, I interviewed Peter Navarro, who's one of the great individuals from the Trump administration.
Yes.
He's got a brand new book out called In Trump Time, which I highly recommend everybody look at. But if I could offer just one little perspective, I don't know if we have a second. But
sure, sure.
If you study Mao's China, Mao Zedong, when he had been in power for a decade or two, he started to have some trouble with his fellow sort of board members, his fellow communist dictator types that were sort of a little underneath him. And they were telling him, it's time for you to leave. It's time for you to step out and let's have somebody else come in. Because, you know, frankly, nothing's working and Mao is screwing up China. But Mao responded to that quite viciously in a desperate effort to hang on to power, to hold on to power. He unleashed the Cultural Revolution in China, where they started burning the statues and destroying the temples. And you know the rest of that story. Do you think that there could be some parallels with the United States of America in that Trump wins? Trump basically shows up, and that is the message to our corrupt ruling class, our corrupt deep state, that they've lost the people. It is time for them to go away. It is time for them to let go of power. And look at what happened since that time, right? Look at our own statues being burned. Look at our own frenzied media and how they responded to all of this. Look at how they activated the FBI and the CIA and the military.
They're purging the armed forces of all Trump. Of all extremists.
I mean, we're all domestic terrorists now.
So do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
I think that the frenzy of desperation you're seeing from the ruling class, from the entrenched beltway interests, is an awareness that they've lost the people. They have not done a good job. And so they have to find various ways to cling to power however they can. And all of this Spygate stuff is part and parcel of a desperate and fragile and paranoid elite that knows if truth starts getting out anywhere, that they could be in big trouble, right? To me, I think we need to have the perspective that this whole thing was done out of desperation. And hopefully the truth will be catching up to everybody, every perpetrator and all this. And there's been a little bit of progress towards that. But even if it doesn't, I think that they still know that their hold on power is very tenuous. And for all their effort and for all their work, they're still not making progress. And they got Biden in there, and you take on Spygate, and you can, people, we don't have any evidence, and they just went with the lies, just like kind of like the election,
right?
You're up against the deep state on the election, and can you prove the election was stolen and taken? Well, when you're up against a deep state, they control the evidence, you can't get to it and get it out, and they'll threaten to sue you and everything else, you know, to try to get in there and get it,
right?
So I feel in a way a lot of optimism about this, to know how weak the people on top are and how they see themselves as being weak. And they needed to do all this stuff just to pave the way to get Biden installed. And he's screwing up the place as fast as he can.
Yeah.
I think in the end, they're going backwards with all of this. They're riding the tiger. And more nervous they get, who knows, know, what other tricks they're going to kind of pull. But it could get wild in this country. It's a dangerous time.
It is.
All right, man. Thank you for that. Hey, Sunday, 4 to 7. Thank you for your time. Don't miss. It's great radio every weekend.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, man. Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks to both. Let's keep in close touch. All the best.
All right. And we don't have time to read them all. I mean, we had some great comments from folks on the audience, and I'm sorry I couldn't have time. We didn't have time to read them all, but it's clear that, you know, you guys, everybody there is up on it. I think the only thing that concerns me is the more paranoid and freaked out they get, the harder they try to crack down.
Let me read this one. Thank you. Always love your show. Keep up for the nation. Allegedly that I would support that, but And then Sandra says, and thank you for your podcast when I miss a show. And,
thank you. Yes. And great job to Matt. He is the expert in so many things. Yes. I want to thank everybody for listening. Mark Poff, Matt Dunn, everybody on Zoom, everybody who listens.
Monday, the trial continues and we'll go to the jury. Want to miss that show.
Get everything at chuckandjulie.com. Thanks to the guys at BBS. It is now time for Party Friday to officially commence. We'll see you all on Monday.